All right, my name is Rick Bradley, and today is Monday, December the 13th, 1993, and I'm in Waco, Texas, with former Senator and Red Sox pitcher Sid Hudson. Sid, first question I want to ask you is, doing the research on your career, one book had you born January the 3rd, 1917, and one had you January 3rd, 1918, and the correct year would be
January 3rd, 1915.
1915, so both of them were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why that.
I don't know where they got all those.
Okay, I've talked to Allie Reynolds and I've talked to a few other guys, and now Allie Reynolds had three different dates and three different books. Was there, not when you were young and you signed to play baseball, did you, I don't want to say this eloquently, but did you lie about your age?
Well, not necessarily, I don't think so. Not at all.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious how none of these dates
seem to
be right.
Some of them just got it wrong, that's all.
All right. So how did you get started playing baseball just a young
kid? Well, I lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there was a manager of a Baltimore Sanford, Florida baseball team down in the Florida State League who lived in Cleveland, Tennessee, and that's only about 30 miles from Chattanooga. And I played a lot of sandlot ball around Chattanooga and in Cleveland, and he had seen me play, and he knew me, and so he called me one day and wondered if I'd like to come to Sanford and play. And I told him I sure would, so I went to Sanford, and that's how I got started.
Mm-hmm. Any high school or?
No, I didn't play high
American
school.
American Legion, anything like that?
Yeah, I played American Legion.
Mm-hmm. Who was the first scout that approached you, and then if it was different from the scout that signed you, who was the guy that eventually signed you?
Well, really, there's never one scout that signed me, really. Nobody signed me, as far as that goes.
Okay.
No scout signed me. But after I got into pro ball, then a couple of scouts scouted me, but none scouted me that I knew of. But there was a fellow in Chattanooga, Tennessee, who had something to do with the Chattanooga Lookouts, Joe Engel in the Chattanooga Lookouts. And he'd seen me play a lot of sandball around there, and he asked Joe Engel to take me to spring training with him. And Joe said, well, we can't afford it. We'll work him out if we get back from spring training. And I said, no, I don't want that. So I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So really, like I told you, this fellow, Guy Lacey, was a fellow's name in Cleveland, Tennessee, who managed. And he's the one that got me, signed me, in other words, got me started.
What did your family think about you playing baseball for a career?
Well, my mother... My father died when I was about 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and my mother never married again, but anyway, she thought it'd be fine. Of course, I used to wear out all my clothes as a youngster, you know, playing, mm-hmm. but she thought it was fine.
Just tell me about the 2 years you spent in Class D ball down in Sanford.
Oh, that was a piece of cake. I really enjoyed that. Well, I went down there as a first baseman,
mm-hmm.
and of course, I had pitched some too, but anyway, I played first base for about 10 days, and they fired the manager and brought in a new manager, Raw Meat Rogers.
Raw Meat?
Raw Meat. He was a player, a coach, a general manager, an owner, and all through his career, lived on a ranch and down here in South Texas. And he actually ate raw meat. That's how he got his name. But anyway, he came in and brought a first baseman with him. So I'm sitting on the bench. And after two or three days, we were playing in Palatka, Florida, and we were in trouble. We were behind in a game, getting beat pretty bad. And he said, you have a good arm. He said, you're a pitch? And I said, yes. He said, well, you got the last two innings. And so I went out and struck out the side in the last two innings. And he said, from now on, you're going to pitch. So from then on, all through my 2 years down there, one day I'd pitch, and the next day I'd play first base, third base, second base, then pitch. And that's the way it was during those, except the next year I didn't play that often, but I did a lot more pitching the second year.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get from Sanford then to Washington from 39 to 40?
Well, I was... played about three quarters of the year in 38 there,
mm-hmm.
and then 39 played full year,
right.
And I was sold to Washington. But before that, the owner of the club had a chance to sit, he told me he had a chance to sell me to the major leagues, and one of the teams was Washington and the other was Cleveland. And I knew back then that Cleveland with Feller and all those pitchers they had then, Garcia and all those, that I might not get much of a chance. So I chose Washington. And a fellow by the name of Dean, along with me, was on the same team in Sanford. And we were sold to Washington Senators together for $12,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got to Washington.
And you didn't see any of that money?
Oh, heavens no. You kidding?
How about, so your first spring training with Washington?
1940.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, really good. We went down real early. It was about the 1st of February, as I remember.
Whereabouts was that?
Orlando.
Okay.
And all of us new guys, rookies, were put up in a boarding house in spring training with Washington. And, of course, we started working out every day, and if you did well, and or they thought enough of you, they'd move you to the hotel with all the other big boys, then, see. And so I stayed about 2 weeks in that boarding house, and then they moved me over to the hotel.
So you knew things were looking
better. Things were looking better.
How'd you find out that you had the team made?
Well, I pitched well in spring training, and I pitched several times.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell, I knew the manager liked me. And he kept telling me, he said, you just keep it up, you're going to make this club. So that's how I knew it.
Mm-hmm. How about your first day in the big leagues? I have that down as April the 18th, 1940. What do you remember about your first day? And then tell me about, I think it's a little different now, but tell me about 1940, how you were treated by your teammates. Was it was there any animosity that you were taking some other guy's job as a young kid? Or?
No animosity whatsoever. And they treated me like I was one of the regular players and were awfully nice to me and tried to help me in every way they could. And, of course, the opening day was quite a thrill for me in Washington. And of course, I was rooming with another guy, and we were in a boarding house then. And, of course, we got a taxi and went to the ballpark and real early and, of course,
mm-hmm.
got dressed. And because we knew opening day in Washington was a big day, and, of course, the president was going to come out throughout the ball. So, sure enough, President Roosevelt, they drove him inside up by the press box,
mm-hmm.
and they carried him into the seat. And he threw the first ball out, and I they had the photographers and newspaper media out in front of everything, and all the ball players are behind them. And I didn't think he'd be able to throw it very far, and I got pretty close, and he threw it, and I had to kind of dive for it. It hit me right in the palm of the hand, and somebody hit me from behind, so I didn't get the ball. Well, that was quite a thrill that day. That's one autograph ball I'd like to have.
I bet. The first year, two one-hitters, and then beat Lefty Grove, 1-0 in 13 innings. So tell me about those three games, what you remember about those three, and at the end of the season, what you were thinking. You know, you've got two one-hitters, and you just beat Lefty Grove, and you're 117 games
well,
your first year.
I won my lost my first two games that I pitched, and won two games. And I was just kind of hanging on, and it was like a 7-6 game or 8-5 game or something like that. And then I lost seven in a row. I had two wins and nine losses. And Mr. Griffith and manager Bucky Harris, they called me in the office one morning, and I said to myself, "Well, this is it. I'm going to Oshkosh or somewhere." And they said, "Well, Sid, you got enough stuff to pitch here. We think you can do it. We're going to leave it up to you. We're going to give you the opportunity to do it, and now it's up to you to show us." So I went out and pitched had that no-hitter going into the ninth inning. And Rip Radcliffe got a double, hit the chalk line,
mm-hmm.
right field. And I had him beat 1-0, and the next batter, he tried to sacrifice, bunted at the ball. George McQuinn is who that was.
First baseman, yeah.
And he missed the ball, and our catcher missed the ball. And so now the runner goes to third, and I got a one-run lead, and nobody out. And I finally struck Quinn out. And then Harlan Cliff, the third baseman, did a little pop foul at third base, and Walt Jundick, center fielder, flied out, so I won 1-0. And the other one was about, and I had a streak of 6 wins in a row there, starting for that one hitter. And then I had another one about a week later, 10 days later. And that was against Philadelphia Athletics. But it was a big score in that game. It was about 11 or 12 runs. And Sam Chapman got the base hit in about the 7th inning. So after that, it seemed I just became a different pitcher. And I was a little wild to start with, nervous and everything, but then I kind of settled down and pitched pretty good from there on the rest of the season. So I ended up winning 15 and lost 7 from June the 21st to the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, I just thought it's pretty easy.
It's not bad for a team that would finish the
season. They were getting me, they get me some runs, and I was holding them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real thrill for that.
How about the game against season. Lefty Groff?
Well, he was my idol as a youngster growing when I was growing up, and I always thought he was the best pitcher in baseball. And of course, facing him was quite a thrill. He's 40 years old at the time, but anyway, we both went 13 innings, and I beat him 1-0.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But just let me ask you a question. You hear a lot, you see a game on TV, a guy's got a no-hitter going to 7th, 8th, 9th inning, you have a lot of arguments about he knows he has a no-hitter going, he doesn't know that he has one going. How about you?
I knew I had
you
one
knew
going,
he had
you
going.
Bet.
I'm curious about that.
No, I did.
All right, how about the next year, 1941? A couple of things I have written down here is the first night game at Griffith Stadium. What did night baseball mean to you? Was it easier for you to pitch at night? Did you prefer pitching in the day?
Well, night baseball, of course, was cooler, naturally, than it was in the evenings, or afternoons, rather. But I really enjoyed the day games better than I did the night games. Maybe later on I didn't, but earlier I did. And, of course, I'd play night ball in Sanford, Florida, starting out, so that wasn't new. I'd played a lot of softball at night and sandlots and all that, so night ball wasn't new.
The All-Star game, about 6 weeks after that first night game, I guess we're talking about. How did you make the All-Star game? Who were you selected by? Was it by the players or by the fans or whoever?
I believe the players selected back then, if I'm not mistaken. And I know, of course, I was selected, and it was quite a thrill. And we had a meeting before the game, and Del Baker was the manager. And he said, "You're going to pitch the last 3 innings." I said, "Okay." And so I went in the 7th inning. And Enos Slaughter was the first hitter. And he hit a little dinky bloop back of third base for a double. And Archie Vaughn was in there. Somebody else, the next hitter tried to sacrifice him to third, and he butted the ball and fouled it off. And then, that's Archie Vaughn, I think, and he hit a home run off
him. Yeah, I guess he had 2 in that game, so.
Yeah, he hit one off of that Edgar Smith, that picture I showed you in there, that left at it. And then I got him out then. I think I struck out 2 guys, the next 2 guys, and then it's my turn to hit when I came in to bat. And so they sent in a pinch hitter, and that was the end of my All-Star appearance.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Williams' home run?
Oh, I was sitting right there in the dugout. I watched it. It's quite a thrill.
I bet.
Yeah, he was jumping up and down, clapping his hands. Yeah.
Next year, one more thing about 41. I almost forgot. There was a game. I was doing some research year by year. Was there a game in Washington? You were playing the Red Sox, and it was raining, and it rained for about 40 minutes, and they didn't cover the field, and you guys were ahead, and I think Cronin was the manager of the Red Sox at the time, and he complained, and they wound up giving the game to the Red Sox. You guys forfeited?
I don't remember that.
No?
I really don't.
Okay.
Although I think the 1941 season is one of the best seasons I ever had,
mm-hmm.
as far as pitching was concerned.
Okay, the next year, 42, you make the All-Star team again, but this time you didn't get to play. I guess you only used two pitchers.
I warmed up once, that's all. Mm-hmm. But that's when I pitched the next night, four innings in that game I was showing you on the pictures on the wall there. Mm-hmm. Next night in Cleveland, I pitched four innings. We beat Bob Feller.
Tell me about that game while we're...
All right, well, see, we were the winner of the 1942 All-Star game. Well, the winners played a game picked out of the service, fellows who had already gone into the service, in Cleveland the next night. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we played them, and Bob Feller started against us, and Tex Houston pitched the first three innings, and then I pitched four innings, and that Edgar Smith pitched the last three. And we won the game 5-0.
And
they had a full house. There were about 70,000 people there that night.
This was a benefit, or?
Well, yeah. Uh-huh. And very few people know about that game because it's never been, I haven't ever seen anything said about it in later years. And so it was a real thrill pitching that because mm-hmm. all the fellows who had gone into the service at that time, well, of course, we'd all played against them. And so, beating Bob Feller, that was good.
I'll bet. Now, the next 3 years you spent in the military. So yeah. Tell me what branch you were in, where you were stationed in.
All right, I enlisted in Waco, Texas, in the Army, the Air Force. At that time, you could enlist and you could join your branch of service, or choose your branch of service. And Bertie Tebbets contacted me after the end of the 1942 season. And he was already here. He was a second lieutenant. And he wanted to know what my number was. My number close? And I said, yes, it is. And he said, why don't you come down here and enlist? We're trying to get a ball club together. So I did. I caught a train, came to Waco, first time I've ever been in Texas. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, we had Hoot Evers come down here, and Bruce Campbell, Cleveland outfielder. And then we had several minor league players. And we had a pretty good team. And we beat everybody around here in Texas, the service teams and, mm-hmm. and semi-pro teams and everything else. So I enjoyed my stay here, and I was stationed out here at Waco Army Airfield. And people used to say that if you had to be in the service, well, that was the place to be because it's kind of like a country club. And we played a lot of baseball, and I stayed there a couple of years, and then I was sent overseas. That's Honolulu, and stayed there for a couple of months. Then they shipped us to Saipan, two ball clubs. We had a team on Saipan, and we had one on Tinian, which was about 3 miles apart. Mm-hmm. And we'd fly over there back and forth and play each other, entertain the troops. That's what we were supposed to be doing. And then we flew to Guam and played some games and entertain the troops. Anyway, we flew to Guam that one time, and they're going to have a big exhibition game, you know, and both teams flew down there, and it was one Sunday afternoon, and when we flew over early, it was pretty early in the morning, and landed, they were clearing off a place to play. Bulldozers were out working, and they got it cleared off and put bases in, and built up a little stands right behind home plate for the brass. And yeah, we played a game and they had 45,000 out to see us play.
Wow.
And the amazing thing about it was, about the third or fourth inning when we heard one fella, all this yelling. You could hear him a mile. And he was the same guy that used to attend ever opening day in Washington. And about the third or fourth inning, he'd make his round the stands yelling just, you know, everybody knew who he was, and just as soon as he got up and started yelling, we all knew who he was. He just stopped the ball game. See? Everybody waving to him and all that. Anyway, I stayed there at Saipan, and like I said, we played back and forth. And then when I was there when they dropped the atomic bomb, and of course, got ready to come back. Well, I came back from Guam, aboard ship. Landed in San Diego, and came to Fort Sam Houston, and got a 2 month furlough, and then I was released. Tex Houston and I were released from the Army the same day, discharged from the Army the same day. So that was quite an experience being in service like that.
Okay.
It was, I didn't mind it, and I was glad to do it, but I wouldn't want to do it again. But I enjoyed it.
How about the following year from 3 years of being in the service to starting playing baseball?
Well, I hurt my arm. In fact, last year I was here, it began to bother me a little bit. And when I was overseas like that, I never did pitch. I couldn't throw. Hurt so.
But your elbow or shoulder or what?
Shoulder. And I mean, it's really sore. I mean, I couldn't even, at one time I couldn't even comb my hair hardly. Hmm. But I tried to pitch some over there, but I just couldn't do it. And I came back, discharged and went back to Washington, spring training, and it bothered me, and it bothered me all season long. And I just didn't throw the same, not at all. And then next year it got a little better. And of course they x-rayed it and sent me to Johns Hopkins Hospital, and a doctor over there was a Job of his day, I guess.
Yeah, Frank
working
Job.
On all yeah, the athletes, you know. And he told me I was through unless I had a found a spur on my shoulder. And he said, you're through unless you can maybe change your delivery some way and get rid of that spur. He said, I could operate on it and take it off. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll be ready to pitch again. So I changed. I threw from three quarters and then sidearm somebody once in a while. So I started throwing every pitch sidearm. And then it got better. And started at right at the end of the season. And then started off the next year and had a little trouble with it in spring training. Then it got all right again. And then from then on, I threw everything sidearm. That was, 47 and 8 long in there. Mm-hmm. And then 9. And then I pitched until the rest of my time in the major leagues, I threw sidearm. And it got all right. It didn't bother me.
No more problems with your arm?
No. Mm-hmm. And the spur disappeared. And the doctors told me it was excessive use of the shoulder. See, when I was here in Waco, I was in special service and gave calisthenics to cadets every day, 6 times a day, 6 days a week, and pitched 250 innings in between.
Hmm.
So it was excessive use of the shoulder that I got developed that spur. And it was just like a match hit.
But
there was a nerve right on it. And boy, after a little throwing,
burned. Huh?
Oh, it really hurt.
1947, one of the most famous days at Yankee Stadium was Babe Ruth Day, and you pitched that day. And tell me about that day.
Well, of course, I watched part of the ceremonies, and I didn't get to see it all. I didn't get to get down and had to go down to the bullpen and warm up. Anyway, I warmed up, and then they delayed the game about 15 minutes, and that really teed me off because, you know, you warm up and you get ready, then you have to wait. In other words, I had to do it over again, so to speak. But anyway, the game rocked along, and the first inning I got in the jam. I got a base hit, and I walked somebody, and somebody popped up, got somebody out, and Charlie Keller was next to him. Had a man on first and third. And he had a one bouncer back to me, and I got a double play, and then from then on, I just breezed right through it. And I got a base hit in the seventh inning off Spud Chandler, and they sacrificed me in the second, and Buddy Lewis got the base hit that scored me, and so that was the end of the game.
One to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to meet the Babe that day?
Not that day. I'd met him before. When I was in the service here, he picked a team out of the service to go to New York and play a team composed of the Dodgers and Giants and the Yankees. And when we walked in up there, there was Babe Ruth sitting at a desk in the clubhouse. And we all shook hands with him, met him. And my commanding officer out here at Waco Army Airfield told me, he said, I'll let you go on one condition, that you bring me back Babe Ruth's autograph. So I got an autograph book, and I got Babe Ruth to sign it, and he did. And I brought it back, but I didn't get one for myself.
Hmm.
I don't know why, but I didn't.
See another hero of yours when you was growing up?
Oh, yeah, sure. And but anyway, I got to meet him that time. Of course, he was in good health then.
Yeah.
But this time in the, I guess you've seen pictures on TV where he's standing on the mound, and you know, real thin, and he's trying to talk,
voice.
Raspy voice, yeah.
late, well, let's go over 46 and 47, 48, 49. The Senators, or the Nationals.
Well, we weren't too good then.
That was what I was going to bring up.
No.
What exactly was the problem here? Was there like a some sort of a caste system, or I mean, the Yankees and the good teams were always good, and the Browns and the Senators for some reason.
Well, the Browns always seem to have the good hitters, but not good pitching, and Washington, I guess, back through the years maybe had a little better pitching than the Browns did, but not much hitting. But we had like Cecil Travis and Mickey Vernon and Buddy Lewis and Stan Spence and. Those kind of guys were all right. But we had some weak spots. Second base was always weak. And, of course, Eddie Yost came along. Third base was bad until he arrived. But, of course, first base was fine with Mickey. And Cecil Travis was one of the better hitters in baseball.
So he wasn't, he got frozen feet, I guess, during
he
the
did,
war. And when he came
war.
Back, wasn't...
No, he wasn't the same.
Wasn't the same.
No, I roomed with him. But we didn't play very well, and I didn't pitch good at all. I didn't throw good, but a couple of years there at all. And I was surprised that I stayed right there after, that one year when I went 4 and lost 17 or whatever.
16 and 48?
Yeah, and I'm surprised they stayed there.
Was it a problem with Washington with a money problem, or was it just poor management, or what do you think was the reason?
Well, I don't think it's a money problem at all. And I used to wonder... they wanted to try to win the pennant or what, made you wonder, you know, because we never did seem to get anybody to improve with. But, no, it was just like one big happy family, and we didn't make much money, but you were happy, you played as hard as you could, and got all enthused in spring and hoped to have a good year and win some games, and but it just didn't happen.
There's one incident in 48 that I found that Bill McGowan, the ump, was suspended for 10 games for throwing the ball strike indicator at some guys on the Washington team. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think he threw it at Ray Scarborough, I believe. Uh-huh. Ray Scarborough was kind of umpire baiter.
Uh-huh.
And he threw it at him, I think. And he picked it up and stuck it in his pocket. I remember that.
Kind of unprecedented, I guess, for an ump to get suspended. How about your last 4 years in Washington, 49 through 52?
Yeah. Well, Marim got better, and that's after I started dropping down, throwing everything sidearm. And I know in 49, I know it got a lot better. And started out in 50, and it didn't bother me in the spring, and I pitched real good in 1950, and pitched pretty good from then on until I was traded to Boston, and I enjoyed my stay in Washington. Like I said, we didn't make a lot of money, but I wasn't the only one. Mm-hmm. Some of the rest of them didn't make much either, but we thought we were doing pretty good, so that's all that mattered, I guess.
When you were traded, were you disappointed at all, or were you happy to be going to the Red Sox?
Well, not sure. I hate to leave Washington and teammates, because it's like Mickey Vernon, some of those guys, I'd been there for years with them, see. And but I thought maybe I got a chance to get to a better club and might have a chance to, you know, get the pennant winner or something. And I enjoyed staying in Washington because, you know, the humidity in Washington, D.C. is terrible in the summertime, and it's hot and humid. Of course, back then we didn't have air conditioning, and I traded to Boston. It was much cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And two night games a week, Tuesdays and Fridays.
Yeah.
Rest of the games played in the afternoon. And I enjoyed that very much.
How about, I guess we'll talk a little bit about that. Was there anything... how'd you get along? I want to talk about managers a little bit later on, but how'd you get along with Boudreau when he was the manager there? I was reading something about by the time the 54 season was over, the players and the fans were kind of happy to see him.
Well, the Boudreau, I don't know. He wasn't well liked, I don't think.
I guess he made a comment about something. He would bring a winner to Boston and trade everybody, including Williams.
He was going to change all of us old guys, I guess, and get rid of us and then bring in some new blood.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen necessarily. But anyway, Boudreau was a good player, and I'm sure he was a good manager. and a likable guy, and but he, I don't think the fellows liked him too well that during those years in Boston.
Mm-hmm. So end of the 54 season now, that turned out to be last year that you pitched. How did you know that it was over for you, at least?
I went spring training in 55,
yeah.
And we had a new manager, Pinky Higgins was the manager. And we had a lot of new pitchers, Willard Dixon, Nicky McDermott, and those kind of guys. And we started playing exhibition games, and of course I was still in a lot of batting practice, but I never did get to pitch, see. And finally I got in and pitched three innings one day, and no hits, and six of the batters hit it back to me. And I thought, well, maybe I'll get a chance to pitch a little bit, but I never got to pitch anymore. So I knew the handwriting was on the wall right mm-hmm. then. So they finally, at the end of this spring training, they called me aside and told me that they had some youngsters coming along, and it's just one of those things that time has arrived. And then Joe Cronin offered me a job, scouting. So I took it. And that was the end of my plan.
Mm-hmm. So you scouted for the Red Sox for 6 years.
Yes.
Was the transition from playing ball every day, Sid, to not playing mm-hmm. anymore, was that an easy one for you? Or?
No.
No?
Quite different. Really and truly, I didn't know if I was a good scout or not. But, of course, it involved a lot of traveling. I didn't mind that too much. But
whereabouts were you doing the scouting back?
Here in Texas. Texas. State of Texas and New Mexico. And At first I was living in Lubbock, Texas, which is about 350 miles west of here, mm-hmm. and when I started scouting, and of course all the playing was back this way, from here on down toward Houston, and heck, you'd never get home, and so we decided to move to Waco. That's how come we moved here. Mm-hmm. My wife went to school here at Baylor, graduated from Baylor, and we met here at Baylor, and me being stationed here in the Army, so this would be centrally located, so we moved here, and then I enjoyed it a lot more then. Then I started, after a while, I kind of learned the ropes and had some nice guys for scouting that would help you out and give you all the information you needed and kind of take care of each other, and so I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed that. How about, then you coached for 11 or 12 years? With
12 years, I guess.
With the Senators, and then when I moved to Texas and became Rangers.
Yeah, well, Mickey Vernon was made the new manager of the new Washington Senators.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me and wondered if I'd like to be his pitching coach, and so I jumped at that. And so I left Boston and went with them. And of course, Mickey, we didn't have much.
Expansion team.
Yeah. Expansion team. And I don't know, Mickey, they just kind of lost interest in him, I think. And, you know, the next year, well, he's gone.
Mm.
Neil Hodges came on. And I worked with Gil for a while. Of course, I knew he was going to bring in his old sidekick from Walker. He was the next catcher. That was his pitching coach all the time. He managed, like, with the Mets and so forth. Walker's his last name.
Yeah.
But anyway, then I started going around through the system, working with pitchers in the new Washington Senators chain. And then every spring, I'd go to spring training, and like Whitey Herzog and Billy Martin and Tim Lemon, then I came back and coached with him in his 1 year in Washington. And of course, Williams took over, and I stayed with him for 4 years. And, of course, Billy Martin, I came back once and worked with him some during the regular season. And then after that, it was Billy Hunter, of course, was the last one. And well, there's one or two other ones in there that managed the team. But I enjoyed being the coach. And I was in and out quite a bit, but I ended up coaching about 12 years, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed it. Threw a lot of batting practice and kind of got in shape again.
As all coaches do. How'd you get along with Billy Martin? You have any good Billy Martin stories? Very
good. Oh, Billy was nice to me. Yeah, he said, in spring training, I was with him, and of course we had two diamonds, you know, and we had all the fundamentals going on the second diamond. And he'd say to me, you know, I'd say, what do you want me to do with these pitchers? He said, listen, you know more about it than I do. He said, you know all about it. Go all over and do whatever you have to do. And he never bothered me. Mm-hmm. He was great to me. I enjoyed working with him.
And then you said from, you just told me that you were coaching.
I guess I started in about 9 years with the Rangers. I was scouting, 8 years I guess it was, I was scouting in the summertime, and then in July and August I would go to down in Florida for the rookie league and work with new pitchers, new signees. Mm-hmm. I did that for about 8 years with the Rangers, and I really enjoyed that. All the new kids, they were eager, and of course had a lot of time, and start your game at 12 o'clock every day and finish about 3, and then golf course around up the block, a few blocks away. So
sounds good.
That's pretty good beauty back then. And I enjoyed that stay with them. And then in 1986, I retired after the 86 season. And baseball coach here at Baylor University, he said, you're not doing anything. Why don't you come out here and work with my pitchers a little while? He said, I can't pay you much money, but sure like to pay you a little, so you won't have to do it for nothing. But anyway, I went out there, and I stayed through this past year. And we won the Southwest Conference Tournament and went to the regionals and got beat by LSU in the regionals. And then this year I decided, I'm going to turn it over to somebody else. I'm going to watch from the sidelines. And mm-hmm. I told the coach I'd come out and fool around his pitchers some this spring. And, mm-hmm. But I'm not going to be the pitching coach.
Full-time basis, it's over. Let me go back now and ask you some more questions. I have about a page and a half here. Tell me about the pitches that you threw, and describe the kind of pitcher you thought you were, and then tell me, was there anybody growing up that you copied or took things from? Or
well, I threw a fastball, curve, and change. I fooled around with a slider a little bit, but I never had anybody teach it to me, and I never did have a pitching coach, really.
And coaching was not in 1940 what it is today, is it?
No, because, you know, today every time a pitcher throws a ball, his coach standing right behind him. But then they weren't there. We had Benny Bingow as a catcher. He was kind of bullpen. He was kind mm-hmm. of our pitching coach. And Bill McKechnie up in Boston was kind of the pitching coach. Anyway, I had a good fastball. I had a good curve. But I never really had a good changeup until toward the end, and I finally developed it. But that's all I used, just those three pitches. But I think my biggest fault was as a pitcher. I had good enough stuff, but I made too many good pitches in certain situations that beat me. Mm-hmm. In other words, instead of hitting that much of the corner, I was getting a little more of the plate, see, and then hitting it, see. And I know that's one of the reasons I lost as many games as I did. And I think it'd been a lot different because I had a good curve. And I was a little wilder than usual. Sometimes maybe I'd go, you know, walk a man a game or something like that for a stretch, and I'd walk 4 or 5, and I don't know whether I concentrated enough on it or not, but if I had it all to do with, I'd change some things, I know, because first of all, I'd work out in the wintertime, but I'd throw in the wintertime, but I never did that when I was playing. But I think if I had it to do over again, I would. But I took care of myself. I didn't dissipate and all that. But
were you working during the wintertime? Did you have
no,
to
I didn't work.
Didn't work?
Sure didn't. And if I had to do it with, I'd do some things different. But I enjoyed my years in baseball, and I thought I played in an era where there were good players and nice fellas and guys that you're glad to be associated with and play with. And I enjoyed it.
You were a pretty good hitter.
Yeah, I thought I was. In fact, I would like to pitch today because you can't get to hit in the American League. No, I enjoyed hitting. I could hit all those guys as far as that goes. I could make contact. I was one of those guys who could make contact.